This is Behind the Docs, the show that shines a spotlight on the people shaping how we understand and use technology. In each episode, we pull back the curtain to talk about what it's really like to create the docs we all rely on. Let's dive in. Hi, welcome to Behind the Docs. We are here today with Laura Minai, and I'm really excited to have this conversation because Laura just joined the team, but she has a really interesting background that we were discussing, and I wanted to have her on because, I mean, this is all about is to have interesting conversations about our world. So Laura, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the company. If you could give us a little bit of background about who you are, like where you came from.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Very excited. I am about a month in. Oh, exactly a month in. It's been a great start. For me, it's really exciting to be back. I feel like I'm back, even though I'm new to the company, because I'm back into the world of tech docs. And that is where I started. So I went to college in California, UC Santa Barbara. And it's a pretty small town. There's only so many places to get a job if you're a student or you're retired. It's really, really hard to work there. But when I was in school, one of the biggest employers there was called Citrix. And a lot of internships were there because it's just one of the big employers in town. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do for a long time. I did anthropology and sociology. And then the very last semester, they offered a minor in professional writing. And my very first day of my senior year, and I went to that class, and there was an editing track. And I remember sitting in the class and being like, wait, this is a job? This is something I can actually do with my life. And it just, like, my mind was blown. And it was really exciting because I've always been that person who, you know, would help people with their resumes and edit their essays and just all kinds of stuff. Like, my whole world was all about words. And it was funny because my parents had always told me that, you know, I was good at writing and reading. I'm like, yeah, you'll be a writer when you grow up. And, oh God, no, I don't want to be a writer. That sounds terrible. Like, I hate writing. But turns out what I hate is creative writing. Still do. Not my jam. But editing just really was amazing. So getting a chance to still be in the content world, but help people improve their writing and just improve so much. So anyways, it was a great start. So that led me to an internship. You had to have an internship to graduate with this. I was very lucky that my teacher had a wife that worked at Citrix, and that is what led me to a pretty awesome career in this space. So I started there in editing. I kind of hung around the company for about 3 years doing sometimes just like 10 hours a week of odd jobs in HR and editorial and things like that, while I was waitressing and doing other things. But the best thing that happened to me was when I was ready to move back closer to home, I was looking for a full-time job, and turns out there was one there. And so I went and applied to this technical writing job, and I did not know what technical writing was, but I showed up to the interview anyways, because it was internal, and I brought them my resume and my portfolio, which was full of training documentation and side chart documentation I had done for my waitressing job at Chili's. And so that was my portfolio for my first tech writing job. And I showed them everything I'd been doing with writing and stuff. And they said, oh, this is tech writing. And I said, oh, what's tech writing? And that's how it all started. And that was my longtime boss named Jason, who I still am very close with. I was on his team for 12 years. So we really built up a big career together in the kind of tech space. He was a new manager at the time as well. So I started out tech writing. We did the support documentation for its GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar, GoToAssist, all those products. Went through a million rebrands and mergers and reverse Morris Trust spinoffs and things I didn't know existed. But what it did was it really, it put a lot of pressure on the documentation because we had a lot of it. There's a lot of products. They had a lot of overlap because the GoTo brand had a lot of similarities. And so every single time, every 2 years, we'd go through a migration or a rebrand or something, we were constantly playing catch up. And so that was really the pain, you know, that we were feeling in the content space. One of these mergers brought us to LogMeIn, which is still, it's not even the company name today. It was the company name for a while. It's product name now. Brought us to LogMeIn, brought us with another team, a tech writing team in Budapest, who are still with that group today. And they were using Ditta, and we didn't know what Ditta was. And they showed us their tech docs, and they're like, yeah, that's what it looks like. And it was really scary looking and didn't really understand the why behind it. Got a chance that year to go to the IDW 2017. That's Scott Abel's conference. It was our first conference, me and a couple of the writers. I was a manager at the time, and our minds were just blown. We had never met other tech writers. We'd never heard of content strategy, didn't know what data was, except for what we'd seen. And sitting there, we all have fond memories still of that, those few days where most stuff went well over our heads. It was very, very in-depth, deep, stuff that we were not set up to do, but they spoke to the pain points that we were having, and they spoke to all. It was great to hear that people had the same issues. People needed to be able to repurpose content. People needed to be able to quickly change names and company names and product names and all those things. At the time, there was a lot of interest in like omnichannel publishing and having the same content but different places. AI chatbots were just starting out, and we had no idea how we were going to do any of that stuff. And we still didn't. Everything they said was so far over our heads. But I came out of that conference to Jason, my manager, and was like, we have to do data. There's no option. We had been like considering it. There was no going back. Absolutely. Clearly, structured content was the future, and that was what we had to do. So that's what brought us to data. I was able to, at that conference, thanks to Scott, got to meet a couple of big names. I got to meet Simple A, Chris at Simple A, Val at Content Rules, Andrea Ames. And so I was able to kind of gather a team of experts to put together a big proposal about, hey, this is our problems, this is what we need to do. We worked for months on putting together this big old plan and audits and all these really interesting things. I put together all these presentations about what is content strategy, what is structured content, what can you do with structured content. I love a good PowerPoint, it's my jam. So I have so many, I still have all my PowerPoints from that. Brought it to the top, and it was shot down so fast because, of course, it was as a massive undertaking for
Oh
technical
no.
documentation. Now I know better. But yeah, there was no way. It was gonna be really expensive and elaborate. And before you can get that kind of a buy-in, this is my first lesson in that. Before you can get that kind of buy-in, you have to really prove your worth. As technical documentation has to be prove its worth, which is very challenging.
Yeah.
And that was what led me down that road. But the good thing that came out of it was I made some amazing contacts, and I also it became clear that we needed content strategy in our space. And so I kind of turned my plan around and decided to become the content strategist. And so after another couple of years of kind of lobbying and proposals and some maternity leave in there, I was able to become, with the help of my manager, the first content strategist at the company and at, in that group. And so that's what led me to where we are today. So content strategy, content engineering, now implementation manager. But that space, that's kind of the supportive and driving role behind the actual tech docs writing that we need. And now I'm back in
Wow.
data.
Okay, so my mind is racing. I have so many questions, and I'm going
Okay.
to go all the way back to Chili's. Please tell me what you were documenting at Chili's. I
Oh,
have to know.
I
As
still have it all.
a
I'll send it
triple
to you after.
dipper
Yep.
stan, what were you documenting at Chili's?
At Chili's, well, there were so many things. One was the host, when you go in, you put your name in. The little host stand had a little, it's like a map, a diagram of the floors,
The
and you had
floor.
to like, yeah, and there was different sections. So when you go, each waiter is assigned a section and it rotates and you have to know which ones are open and who's there and blah, blah, blah. So I made like a little diagram for that and made it all pretty because the old one was just not cute. That last I checked, it's been a few years since I was back. It was still up there. They're all laminated. They're all, they had them go to FedEx and do them all. So there was that. They had the we call it side chart. So when you're or side work, when you're closing out your shift and stuff, there's things you have to do. Some people have to clean the chip machine, some people have to put the soup away, whatever it was, and it rotated. And so I had a pretty elaborate system of what each shift was responsible for on what day. And you would just like plug in the name and that was that. And there was also quite a lot of training we had to do, obviously, food service. I started asking about it and they told me, hey, there's like one lady in Texas who does all this stuff. And I was like, I think she needs help. Let me get in there and help with this stuff. And I even pursued a little bit to see if there was something, a job there I could do with corporate. I don't think they had anything available, but that was, yeah, that was, it was side work at Chili's. So that is what I brought to Jason, my portfolio of Chili's things,
Yeah.
and learned what tech writing was, which, in hindsight, all you avid listeners, don't go to a job interview without Googling what the job title means. Thankfully, Jason had some faith in me as a employee intern of 3 years and my obviously impressive colorful documentation. But yeah, what's tech writing is not a question you want to ask at a tech writing interview.
That is amazing. I mean, I hear it all the time how many people fell into technical writing just because they saw a gap and they filled it, and then that turned into an entire career for them.
Yeah, it's a special kind of interest, I think. And like for me, it's like I said before, I still do not like creative writing. It really makes me nervous, just the idea of having to write anything creative. But technical writing, while dry, it doesn't have to be dry, but it's very straightforward and it's creative in a different way. You know, give me 50,000 instructions and you have me whittle it down. That's a lot of creativity. It's just a different kind. And so I think that some of us just think that way and find it interesting. It's really easy to get lost in this kind of work. You know, when you're deep diving into step-by-step documentation, can be a little meditative, I think. So it's yeah, special kind of person that likes this work. And I think that's why you'll meet people who do the people like me that kind of built it into content strategy and other things. And there's a lot of people who just love tech writing, and that is what their career is, and they are so good at it. And it's just fulfilling for a lot of people.
Absolutely. So tell me, okay, tell me a little bit about, you were talking about putting together all these presentations for your management and things like that. I think that is something that people are constantly talking about. We were just at LavaCon. That was something that was still brought up over and over again. And even though it was ultimately shut down, maybe if you could tell us a little bit about the things that you were focusing on, so that way if someone else is interested in putting something like that together, where are some places they could start? Where would you recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was trying to put together, you know, I was working with some of the greats. So like I said, Simple A, Content Rules, Andrew Ames. They were big in the bit. They are still. It's a small little world in this business, and they know what they're talking about. So they helped me understand the content strategy side. So figuring out what content do you have, what do you need to do with it, what are your goals with it, and it was just all just such a new world. And so for me, the way that I learn is by documenting. And so putting those presentations together was my way of kind of processing what they were telling me and then putting it into words that I understood. And then we could, you know, take them to the top. With the content rules side, we did localize, they still do, this team still localizes into 12, more than 12 languages, I think. And that's a massive undertaking. And we didn't have anything set up at all for sustainability. So again, it was all about the kind of the logistics of it all. I think what I did right, maybe not, I don't know if I did this during that time, but what I did later when I was lobbying for myself to become the content strategist, once I had learned everything, you know, from them and figured out what it is that we need, is that if you want to get buy-in for something, especially this big, you're gonna need to prove the value first. And that is eventually what I was able to do, where because of it, for example, the business was so interested in chatbots, they were so interested in at the time also, it's something we can dig into in a minute too, is we really were learning the value of tech docs from SEO point of view. I think they were just, you know, figuring out the Google Analytics and all that stuff, that we had so much content with so many words, so many keywords, that we were actually the driving force behind a lot of the company's SEO. I didn't know at the time, but that's a leverage point I could have used at the time. So they wanted to include some of our content, the technical support content in the marketing content. They wanted to put it in the chatbot. They wanted to put it in all different kinds of places. In the product itself was a big one. And so there was interest in that stuff. And so for me, I was able to show visually, well, here's how you would do it. And so I had a couple of slides that I still have that were like a picture of a phone and a picture of the website and a picture of, it was probably a bot, or the picture of the product. And then I showed a really simplified version of like a data page, a topic. And I was like, see, this is the title and these are some steps. And this is a short description. I had all these arrows that were showing this little thing could go here and this little thing could go here. And here's how one page could power all the things that you want. And so I think having a very simplified view of the what was a big thing that was able to help. You know, this is a very technical space. Obviously, this is why we're all into this kind of nerdy writing stuff. But if you're trying to speak up, you're trying to speak to leadership, You got to put it in words that they understand because their world is so much higher. Their world is so much bigger picture. They have so many things coming at them. And I think that's also something that you learn as you get more into it. At the beginning, I was like, oh, how dare you not even care about my proposal? But like realistically, no, it was never going to happen. And so understanding a little more about what you need to prove, I think was a big one. So showing them what we could do. Being able to really put some numbers behind the value of the content that, like I said before, we were bringing a lot of that SEO in because we were the support site. We were actually, we had a VP that joined later named Viola, who really put a lot of pressure on us to put numbers behind what we were doing so we could put dollars behind it. So every visit to the site was a deflected call and things like that. And so we could really show the value we were bringing and the dollars we were saving the company. And so once we put more effort into that to show why we mattered, because content is kind of invisible, until it's bad. And apparently ours was good in some ways. You're not going to get that buy-in. And then once we got that buy-in, or at least once we kind of like proved that value, I think the next thing that would have been helpful in later days was helpful was understanding incremental value. So what I had put together was an ideal best state scenario that would have been an absolute dream. All three teams were like, this would be amazing to work on. We've never worked on a project like this. That's because it's not possible. It's just not feasible. So understanding more what kind of incremental change could be, and not putting that burden, I think, on those people that you're asking money from, being a little more clear and doing the homework and the work to understand, okay, maybe we could do something like this if we want to reach this goal. Maybe we could add on this if you want to reach this goal. And again, keeping it super high level, super, C-suite level language, and really focusing on the value behind it, and the business goals alignment, I think is where you got to focus. And that's really what I learned. Content strategy kind of is, right? That's putting the business goals and user needs into the mixer and then bringing out the plan because they don't always line up. And that's kind of our job to walk that line.
Yeah, that's great insight. I love the idea of doing an incremental plan as well. So versus going straight to like the huge overhaul that's really, really daunting, having little steps that you can take along the way to improve. You were talking about how you leveraged SEO insights. So how did you end up uncovering those?
It was by accident. And I'll say that I think this is where one of the things I learned from that IDW conference in 2017, where our minds were just blown, was that marketing and tech docs are frenemies. And it's a long-standing relationship of frenemieship. And there's good reasons why. No malice on either side, but there's good reasons why. And that was what happened to us as well. So we were at the time, I don't think we were in Ditto yet. I think we were authoring in Madcap Flare, which is still some structure. So when we went through our eventual Ditto migration, it was not as bad as it could have been. I think we were in Flare, and we were publishing, I think it was Salesforce was our CMS at the time. We went through a lot of CMS migrations, which was another driving force behind getting the content out of there, putting it safe and sound in Git, where it still lives today, 10 years later. We were publishing, I think it was a, oh yeah, it was a shared CMS. So I think it was Sitecore. So marketing has the dollars, right? Marketing and pretty much all the companies I've worked with, and I've only worked with great big companies, marketing has the money because they're the ones that are bringing in the business, right? And that's an important part of this. Their content is different though. Their content needs are very different. Their content lifespan and life cycle is very in the moment. And it's not what we'd call like the evergreen content. Tech docs is the evergreen content. It goes up and it just stays. And that is great for SEO. And we were, I think somebody reached out to me and he's like, I keep changing this one sentence on this one article to be more, whatever marketing. And you keep changing it back. Why do you keep doing that? And it's like, well, hi, who are you? I've never met you before. Why are you touching my content? So that led to an interesting conversation. He was in marketing. He was trying to change something, and he wanted to know why we kept changing it back because all he could see was a Sitecore publishing logs. And so I showed him that we were not authoring in Sitecore. We were authoring elsewhere. We published to it, et cetera. So every time we published, it was overriding it. And also, why are you touching my content? Can we talk about that? And so that's what kind of led this conversation. But what we learned, in the ensuing conversation is that they had discovered, because SEO, all the SEO money dollars were at, I feel like I'm talking bluey dollar bucks, were at on the marketing side, not on our side. And they had seen the value that our docs, we had tens of like 10,000 articles at the time, 12 languages. That's a lot. And these are long-standing articles. Are they all right? Probably not, but they've been up there forever. And so the SEO was, that was where it was coming from. So they were looking at the analytics. I think it was probably Google Analytics or something. And they just had seen that the vast majority of traffic was coming to our pages. So that's why they were taking interest in it. Once we learned that, and it's kind of established a little better relationship with them. And again, it was an example of like, well, you can't author our content, but if you want to take some snippets of it, here's how we could do it. Maybe we could do it this way, and kind of fueled that conversation. That was pretty eye-opening. And it really helped us learn more. Once we did get into Ditta, we never did have an SEO specialist dedicated to the team, which I think is kind of a fatal flaw. If we knew that we were the driving force, probably should have had, that more dedicated resource, but it was still kind of a borrowed resource from marketing. But we learned a lot more about how we can improve our SEO, already our volume and our long history of being live was really helpful. But there's things you could do, like, turning a short description into, the tags and making sure you have page tags and just all these different things. And that put me further into the content strategy space of being that facilitator between the authors and the tools and the people who are on the tools, and making sure that what we were authoring was getting, you're getting the best value and the best bang for your buck out of that. And so that was how we learned about the marketing side. And then we put more effort into, again, with that VP Yola came and put more of a focus on, I guess not SEO, but analytics in general. SEO was kind of our first glimpse into analytics, and then that she kind of broadened our understanding of our own traffic, our own feedback, our own, what are customers saying on the pages, and making those actionable, and not spending all your time authoring the lowest trafficked pages, focus on the highest ones, things like that. That really changed the game a lot as well.
Yeah, I feel like we could just go on and on and on about that. And as someone who I feel like I always am sitting in a very unique place because I'm a marketer who works for a tech docs company. And so I definitely understand both sides. I always feel like the mediator in a way.
It's an
but
unusual perspective for sure.
exactly. Yeah. And when we do help site assessments, that's one of the things that always comes up that I love to be able to tell their teams is like, hey, you should go look at your SEO and you should start asking how much traffic you're actually bringing in, because we see so often, in fact, we just published a blog about it, that, it is half, if not more, than the total overall traffic for a company. And it makes sense. Like logically, that totally makes sense. And so I always love to unlock that for other teams who have not quite made that leap and tell them like, hey, a couple alt tags on your images can do a lot to improve that. Like if you spent, a month of project just working on some of the SEO on your doc site, you could see a huge lift and then start to pull some of those dollars towards you. So I think it's really cool that you are an example of that.
Yeah, we found our way.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I would say too, the frenemy relationship, it can go both ways, right? We had the fun experience of them trying to update our content, but once we kind of learned more about that, the value that we were bringing, and I feel like once I understood and was able to kind of educate others, and still will, of the differences and needs, like we were able to lobby for when they wanted to upgrade the site. I think whatever we were, CMS site we were on, they were doing a demo, and we were able to be like, absolutely not, this is not what we need. Sounds like it's what you need, but this is not what we need, and be very clear about the differences in the content and the differences, content reuse and the lifespan and just all kinds of reasons why it's not the same content, but they're both valuable. And I think that what maybe tech docs could do better a job of is, they're trying to bring more of our support content value into the marketing world. We should do the same, and maybe we can have more of that kind of marketing spin or more marketing content live amongst our tech docs content, or just find ways to interconnect them, interweave them a little bit better, perhaps than is usually done. Because usually they're very, very, at least in my experience of large companies, very separate teams, just separate processes, separate worlds, not a lot of interplay between them. and there really could be a lot more done on that space.
Absolutely. I think you both sit under the umbrella of content. And even though you're on like different ends of the spectrum, it's still all content for the company. And one of the things that we talk about a lot, and I just had a bunch of conversations about this at LavaCon, is that, everyone keeps saying to the tech docs people, you need to speak up, you need to make those presentations for the C-suite and all of that kind of stuff. But like, that's just not always their personality. Like the on the whole, tech docs is a little bit more of an introverted group. And but you know who isn't? Marketing. And if they became your ally and they were the ones who kept saying, hey, what does tech docs think about this? Like, let's consider tech docs in these conversations. If you were to, just explain more of what you do and start to get more involved in what marketing is doing and how you can help boost them, and then they turn around and do the same for you, that could be a really, really beautiful friendship, and
Absolutely.
could really help get tech docs teams a little further.
It's a good point, especially because tech docs, one of the things that I think at least I love about it is, we work so closely with engineering, at least in the software space, with engineering. And so we really are speaking their language, right? Engineering also not known for their extroverted personalities. We're in that world. We have one foot in that space, and we like it. And we're really getting into the nitty-gritty and learning kind of that auxiliary side of the engineering space. But to your point, that you're missing out on a lot. I think that where both as a tech writer and then later as a content strategist, where I found I was able to form some of those partnerships with marketing was customer support and sales, because they are the ones they're the ones that are suffering from the divide in the content. They're the team. Sales obviously needs the marketing side, but to get people to buy the product, they got to understand the product. They got to be updated on the product. They got to be able to show all kinds of stuff. So they really, really need a lot of insight. And honestly, the product teams and the engineering teams are busy. They do not have time to be working with sales to update that stuff. But you know who does? It's tech writers. I had people come out to me. I'd have to like email blast the whole company release notes for a while, which was terrible. People blocked me all the time when I changed my job. They had to like unblock me. But it got my name out there, and it kind of formed some partnerships where they could say, okay, well, I can come to you guys. You guys can tell me what's going on, right? And sometimes we were driving release calendar notifications, letting them know what was coming up. And once that was kind of coming in, well, then marketing wanted to get more involved. Well, we have a campaign, we have a launch. Are you going to have content updated for that? Well, sure, let's talk about it. What do you know about the launch? What do you need from us? And I was able to get some go-to-market planning and roadmap things that were already happening. I was able to get us on the board, on the docket, get us on the list, make sure that when you're planning a campaign, you've got customer care documentation, you've got sales documentation, do you have tech docs in the loop? And we can also keep you updated on the dates because we know better than anyone else. Customer care too, I mean, this is another whole rabbit hole we could go into, but customer care typically has their own internal documentation because they're on the phones, they're learning all kinds of stuff. One of my closest friends and colleagues, she came from that space, which was a really natural rollover into, her name's Jamie, right, into tech docs, because that's what they did. That's what they do. They're documenting what they learn. And so finding ways to combine that internal and external content and ideally supplement them. It's just, they're the ones, sales and customer care are the customer facing teams that are feeling a lot of this pain. Marketing and tech docs can support them better. And so forming those relationships, I think, was how we found our way to a little bit being closer. And there's just so much more that could be done, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, just incredible. When we first started talking, I knew that you would have some like really great insights, but now I'm just absolutely blown away and very grateful that you're on our
Well,
team.
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm flattered. Thank you. I'm also I it's exciting for me too, because I think like when I think back, 15 years of my career was at one place on one website, and that's crazy. But also it was not just one job. I feel like I lived 10 lives in that space. And that's why I think I'm so close to that team still, because we went through a lot, and we really grew together, and we grew the team together. And they're still doing this is they're now go to. This is the team, the company name. They're still doing amazing things. We're still I hopefully you'll have them on as well to hear what they're doing today, since I left a few years ago. But it all the rebrands, all the mergers, so much churn happens in these huge companies. I didn't realize how much I was learning. And it's really valuable. I knew after we went through our first implementation with the tool, it was Zoom In at the time, that I'd wanted to be on the other side, because it's just really confusing and hard. And I keep saying this to everybody, where I remember being on the customer side and first getting in a meeting with this other team and being like, oh, great, they're gonna solve all of our problems, right? They're the content experts. And that's just not how it worked, but it's pretty cool to know that we've seen a lot, just in all the change that the big companies have gone through to be able to bring some expertise.
Absolutely. Will you tell me a little bit about, I know that we have a lot of people that we talk to that like mergers and acquisitions are almost like they're always a big catalyst for people looking at their documentation and their tooling and that kind of stuff. So what would be some of your big takeaways from the multiple that you've been through for teams that may be going through the same?
I think the right tools matter so much. So the early days, the first couple of rebrands and mergers we went through, we were in Madcap Flare, which offered some find and replace stuff. But it's still very manual. You know, there were a lot of nights there were nights that it was like late night wine night where we're just copy finding and replacing stuff. You know, it was really, really manual, nitty gritty. And once we went through it a few times, either product rebrands or company rebrands, it was when we were starting to move into the, hey, we need something else space. And so that was, like you said, it's a catalyst for a reason, because I think when you're showing the value of tech docs, sometimes the value can be hard to prove, but the pain can be easier to show. And so when they said, okay, well, we have to rebrand. In one case, this was when we were leaving Citrix, spun off the GoTo products. And it was a very severe split in the sense that they wanted all names gone, including like internal file paths. Like it was a very specific date and specific stuff. And so there was a lot more oversight happening, like project management oversight of like marketing, how are you doing? Sales, how are you doing? Tech docs, how are you doing? And so having such a spotlight on us, which is very strange for tech docs, right? Like you said, we're not nor used to being asked questions by others in what we're doing. So that was a little weird. But it really put a focus on how hard it would be to change the things that they were asking us to change. And they even wanted us to put hours behind it. Okay, great. We'll put the hours, we'll tell you how many hours it's going to take. And so showing how painful it was to change something like that helped in later situations when we had to make that case for, hey, we want these tools and here's why. You could just show it. You could show how easy and simple it would be, especially if you set it up right. For people who are coming into structured content, you're going to learn a lot about things like content reuse and using variables and placeholders and things like that. It can feel like overkill, and it will be for some, not everyone needs structured content, but especially for businesses that have a lot of change or might have change, it's so worth it. Because in later rebrands, when we were in Oxygen and we were in Ditto, we were using Git, we were publishing, you know, from the space. I mean, it was minutes. There was a day that I got up at, I think it was 4 a.m. because the launch, our most recent launch, was East Coast time. And I flipped like three switches and everything was flipped. Everything was changed, the new company name. And it was such a proud moment because it was so much, we put so much work into that structure. You know, you got to put in the work to make it the content hygiene, make it clean, use the variables, use all that space, think about what things might change. And use the tools like the find and replace functionality of tools is really important when you're trying to find every little word that needs to change. And then, so if you can really put the time into the content hygiene, like we say, it can be really worth it.
Absolutely. Can you tell me a little bit about the team's like general migration to Ditta? So, y'all were really jazzed about it, but some people are, you know, not. And so I'm curious how it was transitioning into the Ditta environment into more structure that way.
Absolutely. And I think you get the like the different personalities too, because some of us, when we kind of got into the Ditta and you know, you demo Ditta, there's the personality like me that was like, oh, you can do what? And then you can do what? And you just like nerd out over it. And it's so exciting. And there's others who are like, oh my God, this is way too much. I'm not into this. And that's we're all together. And it's important that we work together because you need both, right? You can't just have the ideas person who's overcomplicating things. You got to have some realism behind it as well. So yeah, we had both sides of that coin for sure. We found, like I said, when we first looked at data, it was our friends on the Budapest team who are still on that, most marshal on that team. They were showing us their content. They were like, yeah, that's what we do. If you want to, you can do it too. And that was not the best. Sorry, Chris. It was not the best example of how to utilize something so amazing. So it was a conference that had to get us jazzed up. But I think that, like I said, we were coming out of Flare into Ditta, so we had some structure into full structure. So that was helpful for sure. We also, Chris, the same guy I mentioned, who's still on the team, he was already managing all the Ditta OT and all that side of stuff. He's kind of half developer, and so he was able to write a lot of scripts to help do a lot of auto conversion, and that was really, really, really helpful. Not everyone's going to have that for sure. So that, I think the hurdle of like getting, and we were using Git for version control, which is so nice to see that Heroku can replace some of that complexity for teams. Because honestly, Git and merge conflicts were probably the biggest hurdle in what we were trying to do. So I love that to see how seamless it can be, and really showing the easy data name. But anyways, he was able to get a lot of our stuff into, we were using Oxygen. Pretty automated, but there's so much cleanup, right? Like I mentioned, we had thousands and thousands of articles. At one point, I think the count was 10,000, and that was years ago. You know, I know we have more now. And so the cleanup work that had to happen was certainly very big. It was all hands on deck. We had a fairly, at this time, between the two teams, I think we had like 10 writers. So it was a pretty big team. But by this point, I had kind of fully taken, I think I had taken on, yeah, I was officially a content strategist. We had made the case. This is what was going to happen. It was March of 2020. So my first day as a new content strategist, I was alone with my 10-month-old in my home, and it was a weird time to be starting a new role. But what I was able to do is focus, once I kind of let go of my managerial duties and my writing duties, is really focus on making a plan. And so this is where we turned to performance data. So we had, I think, Google Analytics probably. So I spent a lot of time pulling as much info as I could from Google on traffic. And then I would marry it laboriously with our, I think we had probably like timestamp data. So how old the articles were, things like that. So I made some really elaborate spreadsheets that basically was the checklist for the writers to say, okay, start here and clean up. So we knew that the content was like publishable in Ditta, and I think that was where we started. And the but you have to clean it up, you got to make it good. And so that was that hand polishing was so laborious, and that was what it was. So my job was to put together the list in order of the most important articles that got the biggest traffic, the articles that were oldest. I was able to kind of make like the bottom portion that was like, hey, these are really old and also they get no traffic, kill them off, get rid of them, and go through that process. I was able to, we were using a CMS that was pretty powerful. It was Brightspot, and it was pretty powerful in the sense that I could do a lot of like searching to see, oh, okay, all these articles don't have a short description. Here's the list. You go do this. All these articles are misconfigured in this way. You go do this. And so being able to have really, really component level insight into performance, into age, into each single little piece of it helped so much. And so I spent a lot of time, and this is where, you know, it was valuable having a strategist like myself who could do these things, and tee up the writers to spend their time as efficiently as they could. And so that was the big long tail of the migration, where Christian got us into the space, got us up and running. We did the basics, and then it took some time. And we over time, you know, put in those variables, you put in those keys, and we had a lot of color coding going on and all the fun stuff. You know, it took a lot of time, but I think I still really, you know, that's the way that it, as these migration projects, I'll be able to oversee. I have not yet had one. I'm only a month in, but that's where I think we can really help provide some of that advice, is here's how you're going to want to approach the hand polishing piece. And it teaches you a lot about your content. There's probably a long tail of stuff that's going to be hard to part with, but nobody's looking at it. And you got to just do it. You got to just let it go. It feels so good. It's like decluttering your house. You got to declutter your content too.
Like Marie Kondo for content. All
Yeah. Yeah, it's
right.
kind of fun to be like, these 100 are dead. Just kill them off. You can do it so easily. Fix
Yeah.
broken links and you're done.
Oh man, it sounds like such a undertaking, but must be so rewarding when you hit the finish line. And although, with content, you're never really at the
Yeah, you're
finish
never really
line.
there.
But at least to be at the end of a big migration and all that hand polishing and say, all right, now we have something that we can really rock and roll with, and the days moving forward are a little bit smoother.
They are. And I think that really speaks to it too. That was a big part of the argument that we had to make. And one eventually was that it was going to be a lot of work up front for a big payoff later. And that's something I'm so proud of, is that we were able to make that case and that it did pay off. It is currently paying off. Today, I think it was 8 years ago that we went to that conference, and probably about 5 years of data migration work and cleanup and stuff beyond. The company name is the same, surprisingly. Product names have changed. The CMS has changed. Teams have changed. So many things have changed. The content is still safe and sound where we put it, and they are doing so much with it. Right now, they're planning to go headless completely, drop the CMS, and just publish out of Oxygen, put everything in Oxygen. I can't wait to learn more about that. I don't know much about how that's going to look, but they're publishing, they have a chatbot, and they just publish to a repo. The chatbot pulls from, and it's really easy because they can read it all, and it's just everything's quote unquote easy. It's all set up the right way, and so innovation is so much easier. And that's the thing I remember from that same conference. Someone said, I think it was Scott, that was like, everyone talks about, oh, tech talks is dying, tech talks is dying. This is before ChatGPT too, but it's not. The tools are different, the problems are the same, and they will be the same. And so I think when you invest in something like structured content, you are investing and you're really safeguarding and future-proofing your content, because we just don't know what's going to come next. Nobody, I think, at least I couldn't 10 years ago, have seen ChatGPT and all this stuff coming. But when your content is set up and is machine readable, you can do anything you want really easily. All it's just software. Another mentor friend of mine, who's an engineering developer, would love to say that. It's just software. You do whatever you want. It's just software. Content can be software too if you set it up right. And that's what we're doing here.
Yep, absolutely. At the end of the day, it's all just ones and zeros. And as long as your content has those ones and zeros, it can tell you a lot of what is coming that we don't even know about.
We don't even know, but it's ready for it, which is really exciting.
Super. Well, I mean, this has been I could literally go on for hours, but we both have lots of work to do. But I will ask you my one question that I always ask everyone on Behind the Docs, which is, if there was a hill that you were going to die on in regards to this industry and content, tech docs, whatever it is, what would be that hill?
What do I always want to argue? I think the thing that first comes to mind is what we talked about earlier, which was the marketing and tech docs relationship. And I think because it's one that comes, it's related to this difficulty of saying, of explaining our jobs. What is tech writing? What is tech communications? What is all this team that's doing all these things that no one really understands the value of? It's hard to communicate. And the marketing side, like I said, they're always going to get the dollars. That's just the nature of big businesses. They also have a lot more churn than we do. I know people that are still on my team that we were together for a decade. None of the marketing group is the same after all these years. And that's, I think, really hard in the marketing space, but it also speaks to the differences in content. And I think the hill that I will die on is that that is a fact. It isn't bad, it's just the facts. And we do need to take it into account when we're making plans. So when marketing, we were pulled into so many like CMSs and projects that weren't right for us because we couldn't speak to our own value. And so being able to prove the value of tech docs is a big one. This is my hill. And then being able to prove the value, the differences and the value of a relationship with marketing is the other big one. They are the way in, but they cannot be the driver. When companies start up, starts with engineering, right? Then if you add in some marketing, that's why they're the first in line. Eventually you might get to some content, and that relationship perseveres even when you're 5,000, 10,000 people deep. Marketing cannot be the driver of decisions for tech communications. they shouldn't be and they cannot be. And you're not going to be successful if they are. We were forced into a lot of situations we shouldn't have been. We were not successful in. But they're also not the enemy. And you need to understand and be able to speak to the differences between the two content differences, the team differences, the purposes, the roles in the company, the value that they bring. Find peace and find that relationship, find that value. Like we talked about before, you know, talking about sales and customer care, there are groups here that everyone's doing their own job. And if you're just heads down, not paying attention to what people are doing, you're missing out on a lot of opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Laura. This was a wonderful conversation, and
Thank
I'm
you.
really looking forward to seeing some of your first implementations and knowing how they
Thanks.
go.
I'm excited too. Thanks for the chat. That was really fun.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Docs, where the content's structured, but the conversations aren't. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share it with someone who loves great documentation as much as we do. Until next time, keep creating content that makes a difference.